Good afternoon. Welcome to our second day of doing lectures this way. Hopefully, like before, I'll probably take most questions via the chat window, which I'll be able to monitor on my second screen. There's also a raise hand feature, and I could turn audio, and it's probably a little awkward to use. We'll be monitoring the nonverbal feedback on the participants window. So last time we talked about sort of interfaces the operating system could provide, taking advantage of virtual memory that, let us do fancy things with memory. One of those things was that we had this idea of mmap, where a program could place, we said map, a file into their memory. And this would act like the file. You read from that memory, it reads from the file. You write to that memory, it writes to the file. If someone else modifies the file, it's immediately reflected in that memory. And if multiple people are using the same file, they get the exact same memory. And expanding on this, we saw this idea that, well, we could kind of manage a program's memory as a list of these mappings. And we could treat sort of all the memory that programs are using as what we called a page cache. The idea is that there would be program data and file data, and we just have a home for those on hard drives or solid state disks or other persistent storage. For program data, like the heap, we just make up a place, and for file data, well, we had a file that it belonged to. And we'd use memory as sort of a temporary home where we'd keep recently, frequently used, likely to be used thing parts of that in our fast memory. And we called this the page cache because the unit we were loading and unloading was pages. And we talked about the data structures we used to manage the page cache. We had our page table, the one that the hardware uses, where we told the hardware, hey, this virtual address the program wants to access, here's the physical address it's at. And we also have other ways of accessing this cache, like the read and write system calls, opening a file. So the OS would have its own sort of data structure saying, hey, here's a file, where is the data for that file, which we would use to handle reads and writes. And also to implement things like the mmap call. Then we have to worry about, well, what about on a cache miss? That is, what about when we try to read something from a file or access part of our file mapped into memory and it's not in memory yet? Well, one thing we need a way of figuring out where is that data actually on disk. And for files, we're going to go into that topic in a couple of weeks about, well, we have this idea of a file system where we're going to have a way of deciding where do we put different parts of a file on disk. We also have to worry about data which wasn't in files. Like I had part of the heap in memory, I decided, oh, you're probably not using the heap. I shoved that back to disk, and I might need to bring it back later. How do we store where I put that on disk? We saw one trick we could use for that was using unused parts of the page table entry to store that information. And that was one part of handling a miss. When we had a cache miss, we need to bring in the data into memory that wasn't in memory. But the other part is that you have to replace something that, well, when we're just starting up, it's going to be the case we'll have empty physical memory. We'll have places where it don't have anything, we put it there. But eventually we're going to run out. And when we run out, that means that we need to figure out how to replace something that's already there. And we talked last time about the mechanical part of this. The mechanical part is, well, we're going to put data in a page which already has data. But the problem is that page which has data, we want to make sure that, if it's some file foo, if we read from foo later, we don't get the new data we put in there. We actually go back to disk for foo. you know, if I have part of Foo mapped into my memory and I read from it later, we go back to disk for that. I don't access whatever got replaced with. So we need these reverse mappings where once we choose where we're putting the data, we can undo all the pointers to that old data so we don't get confused about what's there. And today we're going to talk a bunch about the other half of the replacement decision, which is what do we replace, which is going to be more of a policy decision. So before I move on, questions about this topic from last time? So I said we're going to talk about our replacement decision, and the big thing is we need to allocate a page, and our intuition we're going to find out is that we want to allocate a page that's not being used. And the reason for that is simple, that if it's being used, well, if we're replacing whatever's in there, we're going to pay for that pretty soon if it's still being used. So we don't want it to be used. And as a preview, you know, our idea of if it's not being used is that things that haven't been used recently. And generally to support this, we're going to keep track of information about every page so we can do this. And we're going to talk about exactly what form that takes. We're going to have to go through like a more of a theoretical discussion about like what is the right way to choose it. But as a simple idea, we're going to have a data structure for each physical page, and one thing we could store in there is a list. So in Linux, there's a list called LRU, for least recently used, that stores an ordered list of physical pages, and this is how we find the one we want. As we'll learn, this isn't actually going to be the least recently used page for a bunch of reasons. We'll talk about what that looks like more later today. Now, when thinking about this policy question of like what page do we choose, we should go back a step and think about what are our goals in making this decision about where do I bring in data from disk? What do I replace? And there are a bunch of different types of goals we could have. And you should think of this as kind of like very similar to processor scheduling, that we have different goals, and depending on those goals, we might get different algorithms that might look very different. And one goal that we're going to talk a lot about is this idea of hit rate. So a miss is when we have to bring something in from disk, and to optimize the hit rate, that means we're going to have the least times in the future, we're going to have to bring something in from disk into memory. And that's a very sensible goal, and we're going to have some nice results about how we either get the optimized out or approximate that, but that's not actually what we care about. If you were asking me to make an OS for you, you're not going to tell me, hey, I want the best hit rate. That's not actually what you care about. You probably, if you're asking for hit rate, really wanted to ask for best throughput, that you wanted the best performance, so that we get the most work done per unit time. And that's not quite the same thing as optimizing the hit rate. It kind of sounds like it is, and it's close, because, well, bringing something in from disk into memory is slow. It is one of the slowest things our operating systems will ever do, but we'll talk about it, it's not the same. Now, you might also have goals which are completely different. So, for example, we talked about fairness with processor scheduling. You could have the same idea for memory, that your idea could be that I have like 50 users, every user gets the same amount of memory, and our page replacement that optimizes for that is not going to achieve the best throughput because we're going to make someone run slower in order to make sure that the other users don't get really disappointing performance. And therefore, we're likely to lower the overall performance of the system if we could just sum up how much work does each user do. And that might be a trade-off we're 100% okay with. But we're not going to focus on those page replacement algorithms. We're going to talk about hit rate. But first, our caveat for it's not the same as throughput. And the big reason why is that even though cache misses are expensive, they're not all the same. Like when we have to bring something in from disk to do a replacement, it's not always as expensive. So one example is if I'm allocating a page for heap that's empty, that's a lot cheaper than reading it from disk. And we're going to make that kind of decision based on what we, you know, get rid of. Do we get rid of a page of all zeros, or do we get rid of a page where we have to read it from disk? Different costs. If I replace something which has changes from the version on disk, I'm going to have to write back those changes to disk, and that's going to make the process of bringing in the new data slower because first I have to wait to get rid of the changes. Another thing is that we're going to learn that hard drives, and to a lesser extent solid state disks, you know, want to be used in the sense that they have better performance when they're read in certain ways. So hard drives perform a lot better if you can read not one page at a time, but a whole bunch of pages together. And it would be nice to take advantage of that, but we're not going to consider that because we're just saying every page you bring in, that's one miss, even if bringing in multiple at a time would be more efficient. Okay. Another thing we're going to omit when we talk about hit rate that affects throughput is that we're not going to consider being proactive. We're going to be entirely reactive, meaning that we're going to just talk about algorithms for now, which only do things when a program needs to bring in something. And this is not the best you can do. So one example is you could guess that this program is about to access something that it hasn't accessed yet. Talk later next time about ways you could do that. And you could do what's called reading ahead. You could say, okay, I think you're going to access that. I'm not going to wait until I get a page fault or a read system call for it. I'm just going to bring it into memory and solve the problem of that miss, and we're going to lower the hit rate that way. We're going to ignore this for now, but this is really a thing OSs want to do, and it really does help performance a bunch. But for now, we're just going to talk about doing things on demand. We're going to wait until the program tells us for sure I need this now. Even though, you know, the actual optimal solution would be being ahead of the program and, you know, kind of and figuring out, oh, you're about to get that, here you go. So questions about our goals. Okay, so given these restrictions, the only on demand, so we're just entirely reactive, and we're only care about cache hits, we're not going to like try to distinguish between I have to send things back to disk or so on. There is a mathematically optimal solution called Blady's Min. This is the best algorithm for choosing what to replace, and it's very simple. You look at what things are going to be accessed when, and you choose from all your possible choices the page that's going to be accessed furthest in the future. If it's never accessed again, that's infinitely far in the future. And this is a nice simple statement, achieves the optimal hit rate. It's very good, except we can't actually do it. We just can't implement it because I don't know what my program's about to do. We can't really know that. But let's look at how this looks, and I'm going to go through lots of examples today of applying page replacement algorithms. So let me go through sort of what's in this picture here. Let me talk about this. So we're going to say that we have a program. We're going to just have one program with a sequence of pages it accesses, and the pages the program accesses, what we'll say the virtual pages, I'm going to represent by letters. And I'm just going to say, you know, they access A, then B, then C, then A, and so on. I'm not being specific about how this is accessed, so these could be like move instructions that access memory. These could be reads and writes. We don't care about those details. And each of these virtual pages is assigned to a physical page. And I'm saying initially we don't have anything loaded, and when we access A, we bring in A into physical page 1. When we access B, we bring in B to physical page 2. And when we access C, we bring in C to physical page 3. And from that point on, they all contain that data. And after we bring these in, we access A again. We don't need to do anything. There's a cache hit. It's great. And we only have a decision once we access D. And we need to decide, okay, I could put D in place of A in physical page 1, in place of B in page 2, or in place of C in page 3. What is the best choice? And with Belady's min, to make this choice, we're going to say which is accessed furthest in the future. So what I'm going to say is, okay, so here's my access to D, and if I go one time unit ahead, that's A, so A is 1. If I go 1, 2, 3, that's B. If I go 1, 2, 3, 4, that's C. C is furthest in the future, therefore it's the best thing to replace. So that's what I would do with Belady's min. And then we get to that access to C is where our next miss is. And you can get the intuition here for, you know, we're avoiding misses for the longest time. That's why this achieves the optimal miss rate. And with C, we have the similar decision here. Now, here, my access pattern ends here. So we're going to say B is accessed in one time unit, and A and D are accessed in infinity. So we have a tie. And here I've arbitrarily chosen to resolve that tie with A, but for Belady's min, it doesn't care which one you do, because both of them are going to have the same number of misses, same number of replacements. So questions about what I did here, about this replacement strategy? So if there are no questions, let's try an exercise. I drew a box around the wrong page on the slide. It should be around D. This is the page we want. Maybe I can do it as a different color. So D is the page we want. And our question is, which page should we replace, put D in? Should we put it in physical page 1, replacing A, 2, replacing B, or 3, replacing C? Give another 10 seconds or so. Okay, so most of us have the correct answer of C. And the way I figure this out is I say, okay, B is used, is next accessed in one time unit. A is next accessed in 3 time units, and C is next accessed in 4 time units. So C is the winner here as far as being furthest in the future. It's going to help us avoid the most replacements compared to, you know, compared to all our options. So questions about that answer? So, seeing here, ladies and men, it's great. So I guess our optimal miss rate, it's actually fairly simple to do by hand if you have the access pattern. But this problem here, we had the access pattern. We had the list of what pages are used when, and that's not a realistic scenario. And in particular, like, maybe we could figure out what was accessed before D in the operating system, but we sure can't figure out what's about to be accessed, because what would we have? We have machine code. We can't figure it out from that. Like, it's not practical, at least. So instead of actually figuring out what access next, we're going to look for common patterns. So we're going to try to do the same sort of thing Belady's Min would do and guess which page is going to be accessed furthest in the future, but we're not going to do it with actual information about what's accessed next. We're going to have to, like, make a heuristic guess, and it's going to be a guess because, you know, we don't have information about what the program is actually going to do next. We just have what it's already done to figure that out. And the key way, the key pattern we're going to look for, we can describe it as this idea called a working set. One way of thinking about this is, say we are executing a program, and let's say the program's in a loop. Most programs spend most of their time in loops because if it's not a loop, it's hard to spend a lot of time in it. And when we're in any particular loop, let's think about what memory this requires. And we can say, well, we need the code for the loop. The loop might call some functions, like it's not going to all be in the loop. So we need the code for all those functions and the functions they call and so on. We also need all the data structures, sort of variables, and the files used by the loop in all those functions. So this is could be a lot of stuff, but it's not everything in the program's memory. It's not everything the program can access. And we could, in fact, look at any loop and write this set of stuff down. And the model we're going to have is that at any point in time, the program has a working set kind of like this, what we call a working set, the set of stuff it cares about. I call it a set because it's a subset of its memory. And that's what it's using. And everything else basically doesn't matter at that time. That was not going to be actively used. And so this pattern of working sets, you know, our model is that there's a set of stuff the program's using because of the region, the sort of loop or set of code it's in, the sort of type of functionality it's doing, and everything else basically isn't being touched right now. And this means that as far as our replacement policy decision, our prediction is stuff in the working set likely to be used soon, stuff out of the working set is inactive, meaning it's not going to be used soon, meaning it's something we might want to choose when we're approximating Belady's Min. And if we could identify these working sets, which if you say the working set is the stuff it's currently using, you can do by saying, okay, let's look at the stuff it uses in some time window as an approximation of that, then we have an page replacement algorithm that's very concrete. We find the working set of every program that's running. We give the programs their working set. Everything else we get rid of. Maybe we don't actually get rid of it, but we put other things in there that might be useful. And this gives us our intuition for a replacement policy that, you know, we're going to identify recently used things and replace anything that's not in it. And if you've learned about processor caches, you probably learned about sort of the related idea of locality. And this is very much related to temporal locality. You know, that the working set is saying stuff the program has used recently, it's likely to use in the near future. And the working set idea says stronger than that, that this is like a not all of the program's memory is this way. There's that you're going to identify a particular set of stuff and has a particular size that you need to keep in memory. And as I said, this is a guess. Like, programs don't have to work this way, but we have some empirical evidence that programs exhibit this kind of working set behavior, that there's a finite set of stuff that the program is actually accessing, and everything else the program isn't really accessing. And one way we can see this is from simulations of processor caches with like what miss rate you can achieve with a particular cache size. And so here is some data where in the y-axis of these charts, we have miss rate, and in the x-axis, we have size with a log scale. And we get these sort of knees. And basically what this is saying is that if you keep this much data in the cache, then that's enough for the program to do most of its stuff, because like the miss rate doesn't change much after that. But before it does. So this much data is being actively used. The rest is kind of inactive. And we see this in a bunch of programs. We have these sort of knees, which tell you like how much stuff you need to keep in memory to run the program effectively. And sort of our goal is to make sure the stuff we replace is not that part, not that currently being used stuff, but stuff outside there. So questions about this working set idea and how this idea of like, if we cache this much stuff, we get the miss rate, you know, we get to a nice inflection point in the miss rate, how that reflects the working sets. So given that we have this working set idea, I told you like one algorithm is that we could explicitly estimate the working set of saying, you know, it's what the program recently used, and we could use that to say, decide what to keep in memory. And we learned that, you know, if we just keep the working set, we'll have a low miss rate, and there's little advantage to keeping beyond the working set in memory. You know, we don't see much. You know, we have this working set idea that we'll identify, and after that we'll have extra stuff where, you know, it won't help our miss rate very much. And this is like the temporal locality assumption that you may remember if you learned about processor caches in a prior class, which I know is not all of you in detail, that things accessed now will be accessed again soon. So a replacement policy that's a little simpler than actually trying to identify explicitly what the working set is, but that comes from this idea that, yes, there's a subset of stuff that's being used, and there's a subset that's not, is either least recently used or least frequently used. You know, the idea is that if it's not recently used or if it's not frequently used, it's not really part of the working set. That's the stuff we want to replace. And we're going to talk about least recently used as a concrete version of this, the policy. And unlike our Belady's bin policy, this is actually possible. It's possible because we don't need to predict the future. That I don't need to somehow translate machine code into an access pattern without actually writing the program. I just run the program, see what it does. I can actually say what things were least recently used by the program. So let's apply this here to this access pattern. And we're going to get, again, we're going to always load into empty pages initially. And then we have our access to D here. And we need to decide what do we replace. And we're not going to look ahead because in a real OS, we wouldn't know that. We're going to say, okay, what was previously accessed? We're going to say B was accessed one time unit ago, A was 2, C was 3, C is the least recently used thing. We replace C. And then we go on here. So you have a bunch of accesses, and then we need to put something in for C, and we do the same calculation. We go B, 1 unit ago, D, 2, A, 3. A is now least recently used. We replace A. So questions about what I did here or anything about this diagram, since we're going to have a bunch more of these. Now, in this case, it happened that when we did our least recently used computations, we got the same answers we could have gotten with Belady's mean. But that's not always the case, because we're making an assumption that working sets is a good description of the program behavior, that there's these subsets of the memory, but that's, you know, doesn't have to be the case. So here's an example where least recently used performs really bad. And here I access A, then B, then C, that's normal. Then I access D, I say, what do I put in? Well, C is used 1 time unit ago, B 2, A 3, A is least recently used, I replace A, which is unfortunate because A is the exact wrong decision by Belady's min. It's the next thing that we're gonna use. So A has to go in, and using the same type of logic, we say A replaces B, again, the exact wrong decision. So here we get 8 misses, 8 replacements, where if we do Belady's min, we do get this pattern, which is 3. So we aren't close to optimal in some cases. The reason least recently used might be a good policy is when the access pattern actually obeys that working set kind of idea, or that temporal locality idea. So now that we've seen least recently used, let's look at how it applies to our scenario here. So my question here, here I have the start of our access pattern. We're doing least recently used this time. And my question is, which page do I replace for C here? Do I put it in physical page 1 and replace A, 2 and replace B, or 3 and replace D? End the poll in 10 seconds. Okay, so we have pretty much consensus for replacing B, which turns out like it's least recently used, but it turns out with this actual access pattern to have been a poor choice, not what we'd have done with Belady's min. So we're immediately faced with our next decision of what do we do to replace B. I'll be quicker on this since we had probably consensus. And we have a consensus that A is the least recently used. And then we get to the end here. Do our final check. see. So we seem to have agreement. A replaces B, least recently used again. So questions about this exercise? Seems like people are pretty comfortable, at least the people who answered the poll. Okay, so this is a practical algorithm, and when things are working set like it, well, practical, this is an algorithm which like we can actually do, and that's what I mean by practical. And when things are like that working set model, which is how we think programs behave, it does a pretty good job. When they aren't, might not. So, can we do this? Well, we could implement it in software. So, one thing we need to do is we need to maintain the order of how recently used was each page. Easy way of doing that is like a doubly linked list of all pages. By all pages, I mean like a data structure for each page, like Linux does, like a struct for each page. You saw a declaration that would do this earlier. And whenever we access a page, we remove it from the linked list, add it to the head. When we want to replace, we go from the tail of the list furthest away from recently used. Head is most recently used. So this is actually fairly simple to implement, but we have a problem. And the problem here is, well, whenever a page is accessed is an awful lot. Every piece instruction accesses a page because it's machine code that has to be read from a page, and potentially some extra pages because it might be a machine code that says to read or write to memory. And this means doing something whenever a page is accessed is really expensive. Like, if we think about doing this, like, it's possible, but the OS would need to run code for every access. It's probably like 100x plus slowdown, maybe 1000x slowdown. Not, we might tolerate like, a 1 to 10% slowdown, but not this kind of slowdown. We're not, people aren't going to be happy with, to make it so we keep the right things in memory, we run your programs 1000 times slower. It's not an acceptable trade-off. So we're not actually going to implement LRU, but LRU is going to be our inspiration for things we're actually going to implement. We're going to implement things which kind of do like what LRU does. And if we're not going to implement LRU, you might say, well, why is it worth approximating? And one thing to remember is that we told you to begin with, LRU is not the optimum. LRU doesn't optimize the hit rate, because we can't do that without information about the future. And optimizing the hit rate doesn't optimize the throughput. So we don't actually need something that like very tightly approximates this least recently used idea. We can do with something that's more loose. And really, the big thing we want to avoid is we want to avoid scenarios like this here. We want to avoid replacing something and having it immediately accessed. And if things obey the working set idea, like basically we want to just avoid things which weren't accessed, which were accessed kind of recently. Things which were only accessed a while ago, are probably all pretty good to replace. And that's going to be our intuition, that we just want to access things that were not recently accessed. We don't actually care about getting like the least recent thing exactly. We just want, not recently accessed. So for example, if we knew these things were accessed in the last few seconds, that's almost all the information we care about. I probably don't care about the specifics of the order in which those things were accessed in the last few seconds, even though that's technically needed to get LRU implemented exactly. And to do this, one question we're going to have to think about like what algorithms are practical for approximating LRU is how can we detect these accesses? You know, so we know that we're not going to do a strategy where we detect every access, but what are mechanisms to let us detect accesses? And there's going to be two we're going to have to detect accesses, which I'm also going to call it a bunch of times references to a page. So one way is a software solution that takes advantage of page tables. We can mark a page invalid in the page table, and if a page fault happens, we're going to have some data structure that lets us remember, oh, I marked that invalid because I was curious if this program was still using it. And when the page fault happens, we record, yes, it was still using it, and just make it valid return. So it's a fast page fault handling. And we also learn, yes, the program's still using it. And basically, we can answer the question, was it accessed since a few seconds ago, by seeing, did we get a page fault in that few second window for the page? Another approach is that the hardware will sometimes do this for us. Now, the hardware will often have an accessed or reference bit, and this would be in the page, in page table entries, that it will set for us to support precisely looking for these accesses. And both of these approaches end up being mostly the same as far as software. So let's look at how the first approach looks, and then we'll pause for questions. So our first approach is that we're going to temporarily mark the page as invalid. So let's say here, I have a program that does a bunch of memory accesses. To keep things simple, I'm pretending like it's all move instructions. And we're curious whether it's going to actually access for page 123, whether it's actually using it. So we temporarily mark it in the OS as not present. So the program does that, and we get a page fault. And our exception handler needs to figure out, oh, this page fault, I know why I did that. I just was curious about whether you actually accessed it, because I haven't been keeping track of that yet. And so the page fault handler will just mark it as present again, and also record, hey, yep, I saw an access at this time, so we know that. And now, because we marked it as present, we don't have that 1,100x slowdown because we ran code for this access, but all these other accesses to the same page are just going to go super fast. They're going to use the normal page tables, everything's in memory, the OS doesn't get involved. And that's fine because knowing that it was accessed at time X is probably going to be enough for us to avoid replacing it before we should. Now, sometime later on, it might be like a couple minutes after time X, we want to get more up-to-date information on is this still being used? Well, the OS can say, okay, I'm curious whether you're still using it. So like maybe on a timer, or maybe because I've replaced some other pages and know that I need to decide about whether this is still being used soon, but whatever the reason, we have some reason we decide, I need to see if you're still using this page. We temporarily mark it as not present in the page table and repeat the process. When the program next accesses the page, we say, oh yeah, still being used. We update our information about here's when it was last accessed and fix the page table so we don't pay the cost of monitoring every single access the program makes. So questions about this scheme for checking, is this program actually using a page? So this was our software-only scheme, which just relies on page tables, we understand. But this is a very useful thing to support. So often hardware tries to help out the operating system by having an accessed or referenced bit in page table entries. And the idea is that the OS is going to set this access to reference bit to zero, and the processor, as part of using the page tables to translate the program's memory addresses, does a page table lookup and says, oh, I actually used this. Let me flip that from zero to one in memory for you. And it just keeps it that way as the program does more accesses. And eventually, the OS is going to on a timer, similar to the timer we imagined using for setting things as not present, is going to scan these access bits and record, oh, yep, it was used since I cleared it. And it's going to clear it so we can check, is it still being used? So in both of these schemes, we sort of figure out, was it accessed in a time window, but the underlying mechanism is a bit different. And a subtle point about this scheme where we have this bit access bit in page tables is that there are multiple of those. Remember, we talked about like you mmap a file, it could be in multiple processes' memory, possibly with different addresses. So we're going to have multiple page tables with access bits. Part of what the OS that takes advantage of this hardware support does is it needs to know where all of those are. So we have another reason for that reverse mapping and check all of those bits. But that's, you know, something we can do. So questions about our access bits for... So it's from this sort of time window information that we're going to build some much more practical page replacement algorithms. We're going to, you know, we're not going to do LRU because this doesn't give us the precision to do that. We're going to do something that's kind of close. Question, if the processor goes through and sets things to zero, so the processor does not set things to zero, set these access bits to zero ever. The OS is the only thing which does that. Does that answer your question? So the OS decides when it wants to start looking for accesses. Okay. Okay. So we talked about access bits, and access bits detect when we read or write a page. We talked about emulating that functionality by just marking a page as invalid, checking for a page fault. We have a similar problem with another part of page replacement, is if we modify, say, a file I have mapped into my memory, if I'm going to replace that, the operating system needs to know, oh, before I get rid of that data from memory, I better write it back to disk or else we'll forget about it. And the same thing even happens with non-file memory. So like if I have my heap and I swapped out my heap earlier and I just brought it back in, if I want to swap it out again, the OS needs to know, well, can I use the old swapped out version or not? So to help out with this, we need to track what is known as a dirty bit. The dirty bit says, is this different than this sort of master copy on disk? And we can use the same strategy we used for access bits. The only difference is we don't care about all accesses. We only care about writes. So in the software world supporting this, rather than temporarily making the page table entry be not present, we temporarily make it read-only. We get a page fault. And kind of similar to copy and write, we say, well, it's not read-only because it's really read-only. It's read-only because, you know, I was going to do something when you wrote to it. Unlike copy and write, the thing we're going to do is not copy it. The thing we're going to do is just keep track of somewhere else that, oh, it was written to. And there's hardware support for this, which basically works the same way as that access bit, except it's only changed on writes and not all accesses to the page table entry. And this hardware support of access and dirty bits, this is something that, in fact, x86 has both of them. Some other platforms might have decided not to include this support because, as I said, there's ways of getting the same functionality in software just with a few extra exceptions happening. So questions about accessed or dirty bits. Okay, so let's talk about a way of using these access bits to get an approximation of LRU, and I'm going to start with probably the simplest way of doing that. And this is what we're going to call second chance. Or first I'll answer your question. Question is, during a write, does the OS set the access, both accessed and dirty bit to zero? That's a choice for the OS. So if the OS is writing, so if by a write you mean the OS is like writing the data back to the master copy on disk, it almost certainly clears a dirty bit. Whether it also uses that time to record whether the page was accessed or not is totally an OS decision. Does that answer your question? So let's talk about using our access bits, which I call reference bits on this slide, to do some crude approximation of LRU. And what we're going to do here is we're going to have a list of pages, and we're just going to say that we have the newest pages, well, I'll call the newest pages at the top of the list, and the oldest at the bottom. And our first guess, if we didn't know whether things were accessed or not, is that I went to the oldest page is probably the best candidate for what to replace, what to evict. But we want to take advantage of knowing whether or not things are accessed. So I'm going to use the information about was it accessed throughout the entire time it was on this list. And if it was accessed, what I'm going to do is say, okay, you get another chance because I'm not sure you're not being used. I'm going to put you back on the top of the list as a new page, but mark you as not accessed. And only if you make it all the way from the top of this list to the bottom again are we going to actually use that page. So we're giving it a second chance to prove that it's still being used, because we saw that it was in use at some point while it was on the list. If it's not accessed, we actually evict that. So here we're using information about from when you got on the list to when you, to the bottom here, were you ever accessed, to get something closer to LRU. But obviously this is not like, we're not like actually keeping track of the order of accesses, we're just saying, you know, over this long time window, were you accessed? But this at least keeps us from evicting things that were accessed recently, probably. Now I'm going to go through some examples of how this works, and I'm going to take some shorthand, so I want to talk about them. So here I'm saying we start off with empty memory, three physical pages, and our list has our last added, so our newest page is 3, and I have NR for not reference. The reference bit, the access bit is clear to 1. And when we want to bring in A, we're going to take A from the bottom of the list. We're going to ask, was it referenced? And the answer is no, so replace and move up to the top. So that's why A gets in here. And because we accessed A, immediately after we do the replacement, it's going to become referenced. So after I add it to the top of the list, like in my page fault handler, I haven't actually accessed the page yet, but the reason we needed to replace the page is because it's about to be accessed, so it gets accessed right away. And the same thing with B. So with B, we take 2 here, we place it at the top of the list after replacing it with B, and it's accessed right away because that's why we replaced, put B in there, is because it was about to be accessed. And with C, the same thing. And I'm separating these steps here to emphasize that the replacement, so this is the replacement, the use, are separate steps. And we don't actually mark everything as referenced when we put it at the top of the list, but for things that are actually new at the top of the list, that's just going to happen naturally. And in future slides for space, I'm going to skip from here to here. Skip from, you know, one to two, just to keep things compact. But questions about what I'm showing here before I start doing that? So let's go through our example where we've made those shortcuts. So I skipped, you know, right ahead. So here I skipped those two steps. So now we take page one, put A in it, and immediately after we put A in it, we return from our page fault handler. A is accessed. Now it's referenced. And the same with B and C. And then we have a decision for D. And you see that we actually have to do something a little complicated. So first, we take the page at the bottom and we say, okay, was it referenced? And the answer is yes to top. And this is why it goes there, and we don't put D in there yet. We do the same to 2, to 3. And only after we've gone through everything and discovered, gosh, everything on the list was referenced and mark it as not referenced, do we finally decide, okay, now I can do the replacement here. Replace plus used right after. That's when we finally, you know, make D replace A. So on. And note that we have things that accesses which don't require replacement, like this access to B doesn't require replacement. Therefore, we aren't going to manipulate the list. We aren't going to manipulate the list, but this means that we still mark it as reference. So here, B, like, we didn't do any replacement, we didn't change what's in any page, but, you know, because of the replacement of D, we cleared that access bit or cleared the equivalent information the OS was tracking outside the page table, and now when it is referenced again, we record that in there. Okay. So questions about what I showed here? This sort of our second chance scenario. Okay, so let's do exercise then here. So now we have that, and the question is, we want to put an A, we're trying to access A now, we have to replace something, we can't just mark it as reference because it's not in any of these three pages. Which do we replace, D, B, or C? And after we do that, what's at the end of the list? Note that end of the list here is the bottom because I've labeled it end of the list. I'll give you some time for this. give another 30 seconds or so. So, a majority of you say C, which matches the answer I got. And the second most popular answer is B. So, let's talk about B. So, like, your intuition is, well, this is the next page we look at. But remember, this is second chance. So, we're going to look at physical page 2 and say, oh, yes, it's the next thing. It's the what my guess for the oldest page, but it's been accessed recently. So I'm just going to put it back on the top of the list, clearing that referenced bit. Give it a second chance to prove that, no, it's not really being used. And that's the exact right thing for approximating LRU here because, well, it was just accessed. It's good that we learned that, yes, it's in use. Then the next thing we get is physical page 3, and we find out that it since it went to the top of the list over here, where for replacing D, it hasn't been accessed, so that's where we actually put A. And after that, we end up with the end of the list being physical page 1, which a smaller majority of you said was the right answer. And so let's do the next to see if next question about this and see. I'll take have some improvement, or I'll take lead questions if people have some. Give it about another 30 seconds. So most people said B. So what happens is we want to bring in C. I think I have this off by one. We want to bring in C. So first we take one from the page, one from the bottom, and we find out, oh, it's already referenced. So we're not going to just use that right away. We'll give it a second chance. Then we take 2 and we find out not already marked as referenced. It already had its second chance. So we're going to use that and we replace B. And we end up with physical page 3 at the end of the list. Okay. So this is something which it's an approximation of LRU. It's kind of crude, but we avoid the real bad case of things that are accessed recently, you know, are a lot less likely to be replaced. But it has some problems. And one problem is with big memories that we might need to scan through a really big list. And it might be the case that most of the things, or all of the things on that list, are marked as accessed because, you know, things spend a really long time on the list. So this counts accesses from a really long time ago, and it might take a long time to find the page to evict. And this is particularly a problem, like, if we have, like, a 16 gig of RAM, and this is, might not be practical. So there's kind of an extension to this where we're going to say we want to, like, tune its sensitivity. We don't want to look at things that have been accessed the entire, you know, history of the program. We want a smaller list, but we want to use the same kind of strategy, that we're going to have a list of things that we think, you know, we might want to replace, and we're going to see, are they accessed while on that list? And if so, we'll not replace those. And if not, we'll say, yes, that's a good idea. It hasn't been used recently. And this is basically, this sort of idea is basically how Linux's main page replacement algorithm works. So in Linux, they divide things up into two lists. They have an active list, where we have our sort of newer pages at the top and older at the bottom. And on the active list, we do not check for accesses. This is just a plain old list. We don't bother checking if things are referenced while on this list. And the advantage of that is, well, we aren't spending time clearing and reading access bits. We're just saying, well, we know we added it to the list a while ago. That's all I really care about. And every once in a while, well, we guess that the oldest active page, maybe it's not being used, but we aren't sure, so we check. So we put it on the inactive list, and these are the pages, these are checked for accesses. And similar to the second chance idea, here we say, when we guess you're not being used, you go on the inactive list, and you have a second chance to prove that, no, you were wrong. Just because you added me to memory so long ago doesn't mean I'm not being used. You have a second chance to prove you're not being used. And if you do that, we move you back to the active list. And if not, if you make it all the way to the bottom without being referenced, then we evict that page. And because this inactive list is smaller, we limit the time period in which we care about accesses, and therefore the overhead of this approach, and also increase sort of how nicely it approximates LRU, because we can avoid caring about accesses 2 hours ago, which probably aren't relevant when we do this. Some questions about this sort of seek algorithm, where we have our active list. This is just a plain old list. Things go from, you know, we put a page on top, wait for it to be old, then we guess, okay, that page has been around for a while, maybe not used. So questions about this approach? So you can see this is practical to implement. It's not much more complicated than second chance. And importantly, not only do we not rely on identifying every access, we don't even rely on identifying accesses to most of the pages in memory. We just have a subset we care about at any time. So we really manage the overhead. And this is still a pretty reasonable approximation of LRU, because of that intuition that the thing that really matters is not getting exact LRU, because that wouldn't be optimal anyways. It's just making sure anything we evict is not recently used. And we know it's not recently used because presumably it made it from the top of this active list to the bottom. Now, there's a question we didn't talk about, which is, what do we do for the size of the inactive list? I believe Linux does a strategy where basically they say, it's some percentage of memory, and they add things to the inactive list as pages are moved from the inactive list to the active list to keep it that way. And that size, like, it's a trade-off. Like, how much time do you spend checking for accesses? How big is the time window you check for accesses? You know, so you'll get different performance based on that. And you can think of all these schemes, you know, for where basically we periodically check subsets of pages to see if they're accessed. There's sort of an academic sort of generalization sometimes people talk about known as clock algorithms. And the idea of that is like the generalization is that like we have a list of pages, we periodically check, was it referenced on this list? And we get a history and we can make whatever decisions make sense on that history. We can have some ranking of these or these like histories and decide which one do we want to replace. And you might ask, why did I call this a clock algorithm? That's a stupid name. The reason is you can imagine it like the hands of a clock going through and checking access bits. That's sort of the generalization. And the Linux algorithm kind of looks like that, in that we're, you know, the pages go around in a circle, kind of, and we check their access bits at one point, kind of. So it's kind of like it. This is sort of what you'll see. This clock algorithm is what you'll see in textbooks, and maybe something some real OSs do is sort of, you know, if you wanted to get more and more precise, this is what you could do. As you can see from the Linux algorithm, they don't actually care about being like a really precise LRU approximation, you know, or doing anything super fancy. This is, you know, actually a fairly simple decision, which is good because we need to do it a lot. Okay, so questions about our seek algorithm? So this is for syncing up with the other lecture. This is where I'll leave off. So next time we're going to finish up talking about two things with, well, I guess one big topic is, I guess two topics. So one topic is I mentioned in our assumptions, you know, two things we weren't doing. So one thing, you know, we weren't doing was being proactive. And we're going to talk about breaking that assumption and being proactive, actually like reading ahead and doing things in the background to make our performance better. The other thing we're going to talk about is we're going to talk about cases where this working set idea is not actually going to right, and ways that we can identify those scenarios and do something a little better. So that's where I'll leave off today. Any final questions? Okay, so I guess see you next time.